Connie, who is your strongest influence in the saxophone or even musically?
Well, that's a great question. And in a way, it's somewhat hard to answer because over the period of my life, there's been different people who have been kind of main influences for a certain period of time, as you can imagine. I mean, I would say across the board, probably Sonny Rollins, I would say, is my primary influence, although I didn't really sort of get deeply involved in listening to him until I was in my early 20s. But I deeply admire his playing. And, you know, and a more overreaching figure I would add to that list is Duke Ellington, because when I was in high school, my high school band director had been in the Army with Bill Berry, who played trumpet in Ellington's band, and had copied a bunch of the charts and given them to my high school band director. So at that time, which is about 1980, we had a whole book of Ellington charts, which was stuff that was not readily available to high schools like it is now. So it was just a really great situation to be in, to be playing Duke Ellington music 5 days a week in my high school band when I was at age 14 on. So I have to cite Ellington as a primary influence.
Could you tell me more about your work on Maria Schneider's Concert in the Garden and the Grammy-nominated tune you recorded for that effort?
Oh, sure, I'd be happy to. That was around the time I joined her group was when she had first written that piece, so we spent a lot of time rehearsing it. The initial premiere was at Jazz at Lincoln Center, I remember there being various 7-hour rehearsals, which was great because it gave me a chance to play through that many times. And I think the thing that I was focusing on at that time was trying to think about the folkloric aspect behind what she'd written. That particular piece that I'm featured on, Valeria's Sulias and Rimbas, has this particular rhythm that underlies it. So I was listening to some of that music and trying to practice over the song with that in mind. But I also, frankly, started to look at that as not so much a piece for me to play saxophone on, but as I was imagining playing over it, I was thinking more about this Argentinian singer, very famous singer named Eduardo Goyeneche. Edward or Eduardo Goyeneche. And he was an amazing singer, and I remember listening a lot to a record of his, and it was, I think, later in his career, and he didn't have the same vocal range that he had before, so it literally, in some of these instances, it's just like he's talking with an orchestra behind him, but it's so beautiful, and the intention with which he spoke, the rhythmic language that he was using, there was just so much going on there that really spoke to me. So I have to say that was kind of the primary influence behind my solo on that piece, was thinking about Goyeneche and the way he would sing, and also, I guess, paying attention to the folkloric rhythmic aspect of the piece.
Could you tell me about your work with the Dave Douglas Quintet?
Sure. Dave is a great musician, as you know, and I joined the band. It was kind of funny. He had a gig coming up for the group, and he sent me the music, and there was, a working band. That quintet had been together for a while, and Chris Potter had been playing sax, and he just sent me the music, and there was no rehearsal, and actually not even a sound check. I just walked on stage with him, and we played a set of music, and during the set, all his tunes during the set, he looked over to me and said something like, "I'm looking forward to touring and recording with this project, with you and the band," or whatever. And that was kind of it. That was the beginning. So I was in the group for, I think, 5 or 6 years and did a lot of touring and some recording. And it was great. I mean, Dave's a real inspiration. He's a really smart guy and is truly prolific as a composer, probably as you know. And so I learned a lot by working on his music and seeing what his process was like, and that was great. But also, he's also a guy who can do a lot of different things, and he He's a really active blogger, and he's got his own record label, which I'm actually recording for, Greenleaf Music. So he runs all that. He's runs a festival with New Trumpet, which is a big thing that he does in New York every year, and you know, writes music for the variety, all these projects that he has. So I've always been really impressed by just the sheer output and focus that he has. And playing trumpet is such a physical instrument. You have to sort of keep practicing diligently. And so Dave's been a real inspiration to me.
Donnie, could I ask why you are a fan of the electronic realm and its interaction with jazz music?
Well, I would say that from early on, my early experiences with music were that my father's a jazz musician, and my parents were divorced, and my dad would come pick me up one day a week, and we'd drive down to the Santa Cruz Pacific Garden Mall, where he had this gig at an outdoor restaurant that was on the was on the Pacific Garden Mall, as I mentioned. And so he played there sometimes as many as 5 days a week, and so I'd help him set up his instruments, and then when I was quite young, he just had a little chair on the bandstand, and I would sit there. And he played a variety of music that was interesting. It was a combination of great American songbook standards, and some would be instrumental, and for some there'd be singers. Also, he would mix in Cal Jader-esque Latin jazz, and he had a percussion player and horns and whatnot, and then also sort of R&B-ish music like Feel Like Making Love, Mercy, 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 Mustang Sally, tunes like that. So as a kid, that was kind of what I saw. And I saw all those things mixing together kind of cohesively and organically. And so it seemed normal to me. And so I grew up playing in my father's band and playing those different styles all the time. You know, growing up in the Bay Area during that time, Tower Power was, you know, such a popular band, and I got to see them play a bit, love their music. And the bassist, Paul Jackson, who was in Herbie Hancock's famous group, the Headhunters, was living in Santa Cruz at that time. And I started playing with his band when I was about 16. He was playing electric bass and singing and whatnot. So my exposure to electric music came at the beginning of my musical life as well. Leading up to, and then, you know, being a jazz player, I've been so involved in acoustic music for so long, and I kind of felt at a certain point like it would be a good, I was starting to feel like it would be a good idea to do some electric music. And David Binney, who's produced a lot of my records and is just a great musician and producer and composer and saxophonist, was you know, suggesting that I do an electric record. So I did Perpetual Motion a couple years ago, which was a lot of fun, and started touring with that, and I realized, wow, I was really enjoying this, and I started to listen to some electronic music, and then I was starting to see the musical language that the guys in my group were drawing from, which was a little bit more from the electronica realm in a way, especially the drummer, Mark Giuliano. So that was really interesting to me, in the drum and bass realm, stuff that I'd heard a little bit of but never really delved into. So I started really delving into it and listening to it a lot, and enjoying it, and felt it to be inspiring, and felt like there was something there for me to pursue as a composer. So the end result of that was this new record, Casting for Gravity, which tries to bring all those influences together, and there's also some, you know, dub influences on that record, rhythmically speaking, and that's that actually reminded me also of my childhood. Santa Cruz was a popular touring spot for the major reggae artists, so in addition to everything I just mentioned about playing with my father's band, I was also hearing Peter Tosh, Jimmy Cliff, Black Uhuru, Mighty Diamonds, Burning Spear. All those groups were coming through Santa Cruz regularly, and I was listening to reggae music. So in a way, the dub influence is also kind of coming from my childhood. I know that was kind of a long-winded answer, but that's really how it all came together for me.
Does the tune Says Who have a bit of a Weather Report influence, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Chris, that's a great observation. There's that bit at the, you know, sort of the last part of the melody there that we play before we go into improvising, and then out of the drum solo we play it. It's basically like a soli where the bass and the keyboards are playing this really intense line together. And that actually, I remember when I was writing it, I wasn't intending I wasn't initially intending it to feel like a weather report thing. I think I was thinking more just about Americana, you know, and trying to come up with a line that just developed and had that sort of feeling for me. And then as we started playing it and I had those guys play the solo, it started to feel a little bit like Weather Report for me, but which is great because, man, I love Weather Report, you know, and just love that band, love their music and stuff. So I do feel like that says he does have a Weather Report influence, and I'm happy to have it there. Yeah.
On your tune Bend, you are seemingly playing very much like Sonny Rollins if he were walking on the surface of Mars and blowing his saxophone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you hit it right on the head, and I think that probably just, you know, speaks to what a great artist he is and his influence on me, frankly, because his rhythmic sophistication and melodic invention is just so great, so inspiring, and so blue-collar in a way. I think that's what really draws me to him in a sense, is that there's no pretension to it. It's just right there, and he takes the simplest idea and develops it, you know, thematically. And I just love that. And so, I think it comes across, you know, his influence on play.
Tell me about the tune Alpha and Omega.
Well, thanks. You know, that tune is written by an electronica group, Boards of Canada. And it's that melodic line that's quite repetitive that I play on the saxophone. That's coming from their record. And then what they do around that is a lot of sort of atmospheric stuff. And I thought, you know, for our version of that tune, I thought the interesting thing would be what the bass and drums do. You know, like, so I'm essentially holding that line steady, and those guys are playing, you know, in different time feels against it, with it, you know, they're creating different layers of tension by how they play against that line. And so that was the idea, to just see, to unleash those guys and see what they could do around that line to make it interesting. And I'm real happy with how that came out. I thought it was really, really cool.
Stadium Jazz is certainly a riveting number.
Thanks. It's funny that it was just, I played a gig in New York. There's a place called the 55 Bar, which is one of my favorite places, and it's a little bar in the West Village, and for years I've been doing a monthly gig there, and we had finished a set, and Mark was playing drums that night, looked up at me, he said, man, that's some stadium jazz. I was laughing, and I thought, man, that's just a great tune title. So let me see what I can do with that. And that was the impetus for writing that tune, which, yeah, it is. It does get quite intense, and I think that was, you know, trying to reflect the idea of the jazz music in a stadium.
Now, the tune, Henry, that was written for your son, if I understand correctly?
Yeah, that's right. He's about a year and a half now. And so I guess when I wrote that, it was in the first, I don't quite, as you know, as a parent of young children, of course, I don't quite remember exactly when things happen now, but it was early on, and you know, after he'd been born, and it was it's actually, the full story is there's two songs on the record that are about Henry, and one is that song, and you know, I was just trying to, you know, capture just the beauty and the love that happens to parents, you know, when your child is born, and it's just such a special and life-transforming event. So I tried to capture that in that song, and the song Tension, which is also on the record, I was thinking about the thing about being a jazz musician and having young children. So, you know, you come home at 1 a.m. from a gig maybe and unwind a little bit, get into bed at 1:30 a.m., and then about 2 a.m. or 2:15, your son is crying. And you get up and you go into his room, and you know, in Henry's case, it often meant that he'd lost his pacifier. So I was, you know, first scouring his bed for the pacifier, usually unable to find it. And then, you know, the thing of like, I'm bending over and I, you know, the light's off, because if I turn the light on, he'll really, really cry for a long period of time. So I've got the light off, I'm on my hands and knees, you know, scouring the floor. in my mid-40s now, so my back is sore. And, you know, finally find the binky and get it to him, then, of course, he goes right back to sleep. But that thing of the tension of, you know, being sleep-deprived and up and trying to soothe your crying child.
What musical lessons will you be sharing with the students at the Great Plains Jazz Festival?
Well, you know, I'm going to get a sense about maybe what sort of information they've already got and what their needs might be. But you know, generally speaking, I tend to talk about improvising primarily. And I try to provide tools for the students to expand their language as improvisers. So, you know, give them a variety of ways to approach getting more language, melodic, developing their melodic language, rhythmic language, knowledge of the jazz language in general, how to go about doing that. So I try to sort of encompass the whole thing to try to give them a clear, you know, some guidance as to how to, you know, become a real complete musician and improviser. And there's a lot of different sort of detailed stuff I go into, but it's basically trying to cover the whole enchilada, as they say, and give them stuff that they can latch onto, stuff that's tangible and that they can sort of start working on no matter what their level is, whether they're a beginner or intermediate or even advanced. So I really enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to being there and working with them.
Donnie, could I ask if you're going to bring your band from the record to the performance at the 1200 Club of the Holland?
Yeah, indeed. It is the exact lineup from the record who will be at the Holland. So that will be a treat for me, and I'm really looking forward to it.